boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
Welcome into This Has to Work. I'm Matt Hoddle, and joining me today is Tony Somerville. Tony is the founder and CEO of Fleetio. And if you don't know what Fleetio is, they provide fleet management, data, analytics, management tools to hundreds of clients, and I think throughout the world now, correct, Tony?
Correct. We're about 75 countries.
Wow. And it's one of the Southeast's most successful startups, certainly one of Birmingham, Alabama's most successful startups. It's also a great example of how a successful startup moves through the stages of growth, at least partially measured in kind of revenue. Now, you know, So first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Excited to be on a podcast. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so it's fun to be on one.
I won't quiz you whether or not you've listened to our podcast.
But I have. I listened to my wife when she was on it.
That's the right answer. Good job. That is the correct answer. So before we get into it, a big disclaimer, revenue is certainly one imperfect measure of how a company has scaled. And certainly, I respect that, but it's also something that I think people kind of readily understand. And so we're going to use that as a basic measure of it. But again, just big disclaimer, I understand that that's certainly not the only thing. So let's just start with some background. When was Fleetio started?
I started the company in summer of 2011, really when I left my previous job and kind of, you know, went down the path of figuring out if this could be something. I had a few ideas for a business venture, but really kind of spent the last half of 2011 just figuring out what I was going to do, but launched Fleetio as it is today in 2012.
And did you start it completely by yourself? Did you have other folks with you? Was it kind of the kitchen table type deal and then it grew from there, or what did that look like at the start?
Yeah, it was just me. You know, wish looking back, I mean, you always want to potentially find a co-founder, but at the same time too, time isn't on your side. You got to strike while the iron's hot. And you know, it was one of those things where the timing was best for me to go ahead and do it, even though there wasn't, you know, necessarily a co-founder.
Yeah. So how would you categorize the size of the company now? So 2011 to now, how big, or how would you kind of categorize it?
Well, we're certainly a lot bigger from a headcount perspective. We're 90 people, approaching 100 today, which feels huge compared to even just 8 years ago. It's just one. You know, we're in 75 countries. We have well into the thousands of customers, ranging from small and even very small businesses up to some very, very large enterprise and mega companies that are, you know, international global businesses.
So do you know how many total vehicles Fleetio is running on right now?
Customers today use the platform to manage about 400,000 vehicles and assets.
Wow. Now, do you have like a big tracker up somewhere in Fleetio, like Facebook had, as far as how many users had signed up?
We do. We use a tool that everybody has access to kind of, it's a business intelligence tool. And when you open it up, it has all of our major stats, like number of vehicles, number of users, number of customers, all that type of thing.
Do you have like a confetti cannon for like every time you hit a milestone?
And we just don't have off? That, but we've got a system wired up that kind of does an air horn type thing for certain.
Are you serious?
Things. Yeah, you know.
I was half kidding. That's pretty cool. I like that. All right, so let's just talk about kind of getting to, and again, in gross terms, as far as like the first $1 million in revenue. How long did it take? I mean, you started in 2011. How long did it take to get to kind of that level?
Yeah, so it took us about 4 years to get there. That was launching in 2012 with just a handful of local customers, and really the business was the whole scalability of the business hinged on our ability to, you know, generate leads from an inbound perspective, get website traffic to come to, you know, Fleetio.com, and be able to convert that traffic into paying customers, and particularly, you know, in the early days, you kind of get local customers, or you take any customer that you can find based on the vision that you have. But, you know, really that's those first 10 unaffiliated, you know, they're not doing me a favor type customers. Those are really when you start to realize that you're onto something. And so started to get those first ones in the kind of first quarter of 2012. But it was a long slog of 4 years before we hit the million mark. And, you know, to your point earlier, too, like revenue is a great indicator of a company size, but the other, I think, key metric there too is gross margins. You know, you can have a very high revenue business with very low gross margins, and you know, we're a pure software as a service business. Our customers pay a subscription fee to use our software. And, you know, we have very high, you know, mid to high 80% of gross margin. So a dollar of revenue for us is, you know, we get to use that to fund most of our operations versus a company with thinner margins.
All the product people out there that are listening to this are so jealous of the kind of SaaS type margins. But, you know, that's a really good point. How did the employee kind of makeup change during that? Well, let me take a question first. So was it incremental or was it exponential? Did you like at some point in time, like really hit product market fit in, let's say year three, and then it was a rocket ship? Or did you just kind of add over time in a fairly linear fashion?
You know, we have a tool that charts all of our revenue, and you can slice it and dice it by quarter, by year, by month, all that type of thing. And when you look at it, I mean, it is starting to be that kind of hockey stick from then to now. But, you know, every month it just is incremental. There's never one silver bullet. There's never one thing that like, oh, okay, that was it. It's a, you know, you move the ball forward every day, and, you know, hopefully you're picking the right things to focus your efforts on, and that stuff just starts to add up.
Yeah. So how did the employee base change over that period of time? Because, you know, obviously it starts with you having an idea, you know, at a kitchen table or whatever the case may be. But what were the big changes within kind of the employees or the team structure during that period?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And I think a lot of where we focus today is never forgetting that early team structure, because as a company gets big, and we're doing this constantly today, is like sort of the mitosis process of splitting back up into smaller sub teams, because the reason that startups win is because there's just less friction. They have less people, whether it's one person or five or 10 people. You know, the decision-making process is fast, and you move fast, and you have autonomy, and you have a sense of ownership, and, you know, you decide something to do, and you just go. You know, there's not a lot of overhead. And I think, you know, I can sense it. You know, I think almost all companies, as a company gets bigger, you start to sense these layers, these overhead, you know, type things. And, you know, you have to have more structure, obviously, as a larger company, but you also can't forget your roots. It's like, what got us this far? You know, is the thing that you have to make sure that you don't forget those things. And so, you know, our early team was, you know, first a lot more generalists, people that, you know, could handle multiple things and wanted to handle multiple things. I mean, a lot of people that join startups aren't satisfied working a very specialized role within a large company. They want to come into a company where they can kind of flex their muscles in lots of different ways, use their brain in multiple ways, and then see the impact of their work very quickly. And so, you know, we had you know, Matt, who, you know, he was the first hire that was, you know, not me. And he was kind of a generalist, did a lot of stuff other than coding. I was doing a lot of the software engineering back in the very, very beginning. And then we hired a couple of software engineers. Those two are still with us today. They're two of our incredibly, you know, most important, you know, engineering folks. And then, you know, Lori on the marketing team, who leads our marketing team today. You know, it's kind of you're building the basic structure of a SaaS business, which is, you need a product vision, and you need engineers to make that thing a reality. Then you have to wrap that core product in a marketing, you know, message and a value promise to customers. And then you have to go and you have to figure out how to sell it. And so, you know, we had an early sales team. Now it's, you know, a lot more of people in various roles and in different departments, but our core departments are product and engineering, marketing, you know, delivering a value proposition. And then we have a sales team that's, you know, quite large today. And then we have a whole customer success team. And that's, you know, people that are supporting our customers directly and reacting to questions they have, but also proactively supporting customers and documenting the system and things of that nature. And, you know, we have G&A now. We have Jonathan, our CFO. We have, you know, an HR director. And we have, you know, two recruiters now. We have, you know, a lot more kind of back office and people that help make sure the organization is running very streamlined. But, you know, the core competencies of what we do every day really doesn't change. You know, SaaS is a fairly straightforward business model. I mean, it's complicated in lots of different ways, but it's also pretty simplistic and you know, you can kind of keep your eye on the ball and just grow and scale it.
Now, you certainly weren't coming into Fleetio without a pretty, you know, deep knowledge of SaaS products and product management, product development, and a lot of the things that come along with it. But being the CEO, especially of a growing organization in those formative years, you know, that's a learn on the job type thing. And I've always known you to be a very aggressive learner, right? You're always trying to find out. You're always asking, like, what's working other places? What, you know, hey, if it's a good idea and I can beg, borrow, or steal it, I will, you know, which I think is a mark of most, if not all, really great founders and CEOs. But for you, what was challenging and changing for you as that leader of this organization in those formative years? What was a challenge in that role for you?
Yeah, I mean, the easy answer to that is just being able to step away from being an individual contributor. I mean, I think that's where, you know, it's challenging for a lot of great individual contributors to become leaders. You have to be able to lead and coach, but not necessarily do everything. But, you know, I mean, even in the early days, I would make sure that I was, you know, there's not many people, so you have to work in the business. You have to do certain things. I mean, I would answer support tickets. I would write documentation. I would obviously, you know, write some of the software. But, you know, as time goes on, you have to start working on building the business, not just building, you know, whatever you're building for the customers and kind of working in an operational role. And so, you know, I think that's always a challenge, right? You know, it's more satisfying to go into a job some days and like do some work and like check off some boxes and see the fruits of your labor in that single day. A lot of times as you grow, and I've certainly had to get more comfortable with this, I mean, a lot of the things that I work on now may or may not, you know, come to fruition for years from now, you know, and there's not a lot of the feedback loop sometimes gets longer and versus like doing a job, seeing the fruits of your labor. And so you have to learn how to do that. But that's, you know, that's not just being the CEO. I think anybody that wants to become more of a leader, you have to get comfortable, you know, not doing everything yourself.
And not to overly, you know, simplify that scenario, but I mean, you also, you know, you started your career literally being able to work on a product and then seeing, did it work? Did it not work? And having some like real demonstrative, you know, example of progress for the day. When you start to get into those CEO leadership roles, it's like, you know, I was in meetings all day or I had all these, you know, conversations all day. I don't really know if I contributed or not. And to your point, it becomes a longer time horizon, which is you have to trust yourself a bit, right? Yeah. So in that, as you were going through this, what assumptions do you think you made early on that actually proved to be wrong, that actually changed over time or you learned to not be correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, specifically, there's probably a lot of assumptions around, you know, sometimes in the early days, you get pretty good at like being able to iterate on the product and have intuition on things. And I think as we've grown, you know, you start to get better at using market data and customer data and things like that to kind of evolve the product roadmap versus, you know, any startup starts out as just, you know, somebody with a vision and or a team with a vision and trying to achieve that vision. And if you're successful, then, you know, or if you had the right vision and you picked the right, you know, circumstances, then you can be successful. But over time, you have to kind of get into, you can't just do everything off of instincts, right? And so, you know, I mean, just getting better about that. I'm trying to think of any more specific tactical advice. I mean, we've definitely made a lot of mistakes and had to, you know, course correct. And you know, I think one of the bigger things that we probably did wrong was we developed a second product years ago that was, you know, kind of we got ahead of our skis on thinking that we saw an opportunity that didn't really exist or it didn't exist as, you know, as well as in the form that we had hoped it would, and, you know, had to kind of backtrack that product out, and we don't do it today. But it's, you know, there's definitely, just because you get, you know, some things right, you're not going to get everything right.
One thing that I thought was I reflect on from knowing you for a few years now, and I think when I first met you, you had really started to, like, I mean, the kind of the revenue and this and the adoption rates and all the product market fit, that stuff was really clicking. And you told me something, and I'm going to butcher the actual numbers, but you told me at one point in time you had, like, at that point over 200 customers on the platform with a credit card that you were charging every month that you had never talked to. And you weren't bragging about it like, hey, we don't take care of our customers. You were just saying it matter of factly. And my eyes really lit up. And I think I probably took you a little bit by surprise, but that to me was the most compelling thing I had heard, because of that ability to have, you know, effectively somebody, you know, for your product to be in the right place, presented the right way, checking all those boxes for somebody to literally come to your website, look at your case studies that you guys had at the time. I think you still have them, you know, decide that this was for them, give you a credit card and start using the product. And you never had to talk to them. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know, that's really the kind of the holy grail. And it was funny because when you said it to me, you said it as kind of matter of factly, but I kept thinking to myself, I'm like, you know, how few companies and products ever get to the point where that happens. But you guys were just kind of, it was just part of your process and you were moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of things, like going back to even before I started Fleetio, when I just knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And a lot of things, you know, you're looking at what potential problems could I solve, like what exists in the world, what doesn't exist in the world today that should exist. But it was also like back in 2010, 2011, like realizing that the way that businesses buy tools in software, or just tools, but buy a solution to a problem, is rapidly going to change. I mean, the internet has created the ability to have business models that the world has never seen before, and the ability to build something, put it out, you know, in a way that anybody in the world can access, build a compelling value proposition that people can just read or watch videos, and then go through a process of purchasing that thing. Like, yeah, I mean, I guess once you kind of get over the hump and we've seen it happen, you sort of get used to it. But yeah, I mean, that could not have happened in, you know, the world prior to the early 2000s, right? And even then, it was like a lot of the confluence of all the technologies, all the things from, you know, the consumer behavior and all the tooling that's out there, like AWS and Stripe and all these things, to just make it easier and easier and easier to do that stuff. Yeah, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but, you know, if you're not kind of in it every day, I guess it can be a little bit unique.
Yeah, it was interesting. I read an article, I read the book Scaling Up, and they talk about a statistic that says 94% of all businesses will never get $2 million. They're not just talking about startups. They're talking about any kind, and not just technology company, any kind of companies.
Yep.
Getting to $1 million, you know, 94% of them will never hit it. So I think that they're, for those people who might be listening to the episode and thinking about, you know, I'm a $250,000 business in gross revenue. I'm trying to get to the next thing. I feel like it's there. I feel like we're doing the right things. What kind of mindset do you think those founders really need to adopt as they're moving towards that kind of that threshold or that size of a business?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just being bought into your vision. I think, you know, it's easy to say, like, look at metrics, and you should be data driven and watching, you know, things that are measurable. You know, are sales increasing? Are, you know, your customers happy, by measure of actual metrics, in the sense that they're using the product and things of that nature? But, you know, I think what keeps me, and still to this day keeps me, and, you know, a lot of people at Fleetio motivated, is you talk to customers, and, you know, we measure NPS and things of that nature. And so you get like real qualitative feedback on things, and people say nice things. Sometimes people say things that we need to improve. You know, I mean, that's also good as well. But, like, you know, I think I've always liked the saying, nothing interesting happens in the office. And it's just a good reminder, you got to get out of the office. You can't sit there in front of a computer screen all day, every day, and expect to, you know, really do anything that makes a dent in the world. And so, you know, for me, and especially like a company that has some traction, but you're, you know, there's hard days, there's always hard days. And it's like, how do you stay motivated? Well, you know, being excited about what you're building, but also knowing that your customers are excited about what you're building, that just helps so much.
So you've now since grown the company, or I should say the team, because I know you'll give credit to the team, not yourself. But so the Fleetio team, the organization, has now grown to multiples of millions of dollars. And that scale, with that scale and with that growth process, the fundamental question I wanted to ask is, How was that scaling process different, going from a million to, you know, potentially 10x, versus going from, say, $100,000 to $1 million?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is just, this is where metrics and making sure that you're paying attention to things matters the most, because you have to figure out what is working and then double down, triple down, quadruple down on those things and start to, you know, either avoid problems or just stop focusing on things that are just not really working. And so what that really means is just going from, you know, zero to one is about being scrappy and being perseverant and, you know, going out and just trying to figure out, is there a need for what I think I'm, you know, what the vision is for whatever I'm building and my team is building. And then once things start to work and you have data and you have a feedback loop, you have to then get a lot more precise. Like, who is this working for? In our market, I mean, we have a big total addressable market. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of fleets in the U.S. alone, worldwide, you know, there's millions of them. And so, you know, you have to start then getting a lot more critical. I'm like, okay, everybody can't be a buyer of this, even though, you know, we all want to think about our TAM as
infinite.
Infinite. And this can be a $1 trillion company if we just get 1% of the market.
That's right.
But you have to start looking at and tracking things like, industries and, you know, splitting up and segmenting your customers. And we're still, you know, have a long way to go on this. I think, you know, as we think about how do you get to 100 million in revenue, it's more of this type of stuff, which is, you know, really understanding and segmenting customers and building your go-to-market strategy as a very focused thing, where in the early days, you're sort of a little bit spray and pray. Like, there's no you should be experimenting with things and trying to figure out what's going to stick in the early days. But then once you find a few things that stick, like, go after those fast.
So it sounds to me like there is some forced discipline in that process, right? So it's not just the things that you love to work on that you get excited about working on, but really paying attention to, are we doing the right things? Are we spending our time in the right places? And are we focusing on making sure that we're looking around corners? And I think the thing about the Net Promoter Score is a great example. Like, that's not something that people get excited about doing. Nobody goes, oh, I really want to survey all of our customers and ask them how likely they are to refer us to a colleague, right? That's not super exciting, but the data you get back is actionable. Yeah. And so that level of discipline sounds like something that even gets higher at the point of which you're saying, okay, now we really we're hitting the gas, we're really growing this thing. To have that discipline is a big important part of it.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I always remind myself and our team about is that revenue growth is not a strategy. That's an outcome of picking the right strategy. And a lot of the things that businesses are measured by at, you know, the highest levels and what they're valued on, those are things that are just the outcomes of doing the little things right. And so how are you optimizing yourself to understand and take and have quantitative data that you can actually take action on that week or that month or that quarter and see if it's working? And if you do all those things right, then the big metrics, you know, things like revenue or reducing churn rate or things like that, like, those things are the outcomes of you doing the small things right. And how do you focus on the small things? That becomes, you know, the question of what you measure and how you build the business around things that are actionable.
So safe to say you're a big Peter Drucker fan?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love all the management philosophers, him, Andy Grove, a lot of the people that treat building a business like an engineer. You know, I mean, the scientific process is and the way that engineers think, I think, you know, you can transfer that same mindset. You know, in the early days it was about building a product. Now, I mean, I get to use my builder mindset, but I'm building a company, you know?
Yeah. It shouldn't be magic. It should be science, right?
Exactly.
That's the idea. So was it harder going from, say, you know, 100,000 to a million than it was to say million to multiples of millions?
I think yeah. I mean, I think getting something off the ground, like, there's never, like, there's hard problems that we have today, and there's a lot more people, and there's a lot more potential for, and there's more to lose, you know, and those types of things are, you know, just as scary at times, or just as, like, you know, you have to get your head right a lot of times around those types of things. But in the early days, like, you know, I think that's why entrepreneurs always respect other entrepreneurs, no matter the size, because if you've taken something from nothing to a little bit of something, like, and you've gone out on a ledge and quit a job and done something that people look at you like you have three eyes, you know, that takes a special person to go and do that and to even start a new business and then to see it turn into something that actually starts to work. I mean, that's a tough mountain to climb, but it's so worth it.
Yeah, it's kind of the gradations of entrepreneurship. So it's the entrepreneurs that started something small and did pretty well. We always respect anybody who's taken that leap, you know. But there's another echelon with which is, you know, entrepreneurs that went out, failed, and then did it again. Like, they literally lived through, you know, the risk manifest, right, itself, and they still say, no, I'm going to go and do it again. So I'm with you. And I feel like you can see them from 1,000 feet away. You can just recognize them from a long distance out. So for you, what changed that was really uncomfortable for you? I mean, was it the team size? Because I know that SaaS companies that are going through this kind of growth, especially, I think really, really talking about the acceleration of the growth, you know, from, say, you know, 2017 to now has been astronomically fast. Yeah. And during that period, you know, I'm sure that the teams have changed, the workflows have changed. I know you, and you've probably added a ton of data to look at and are looking at it in a bunch of different ways. For you, what's been really uncomfortable? What has made you uncomfortable that you've had to overcome in that period?
The things that you just described, you know, having data and all that kind of stuff, the biggest thing that gets uncomfortable over time that you just have to learn how to get better at is not knowing everything. Like, there's a lot of stuff happening at Fleetio today that I'm not in the weeds of. I'm not in the details of. I don't even know some of the things that are happening. But, you know, the thing, what makes me proud, though, is that we continue to make, you know, we're continuing to grow really fast. We're continuing to do a lot of the things the right way and getting, you know, making progress on all fronts where we have set up a culture, you know, and philosophies and things that, you know, were built in the early days that have scaled and processes that have scaled without me. You know, I mean, like, I think a great business that's valuable isn't because one or two people are doing something special. It's because the whole company has been built on a foundation that does things the right way. And you can't know everything. I mean, like, at a certain point, you know, and that's really difficult once you get kind of 20, 30, 40 employees. It's a lot bigger than 5 or 10, and you really can't know what is, you start to lose sight of some of the details that you had complete oversight of when you're a very small business. And, you know, I think all entrepreneurs that start a company and are hands-on with everything, to not know what's happening and, you know, you're going to know on the big stuff, but, like, you know, you start to not know, you start to drift away, I guess, from some of the minutia of the detail work. And, you know, you have to just let that stuff go, but it's not as easy as it sounds.
So you guys have, and I'm going to make sure I get the name right, but you guys have at least once a year a Fleet Week.
Fleet Week.
And that's when you bring in everybody to Birmingham, whether they're remote or they're local or whatever the case may be. And obviously that's something that speaks to making sure that you're building and maintaining that culture. Where did that idea come from, and how important has it been for you guys in maintaining that culture?
Well, one of the decisions that we made, or really I even made before I even started the business, was that it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. Like, I saw two things that I thought would be exciting, irregardless of what type of business I built, you know, what industry I focused on from a software perspective. That was one, you know, we're talking about earlier, just like the landscape of technology and tooling and, you know, the fact that you could build a platform that people could buy, you know, without talking to a human being. Like, all that stuff was really starting to come to fruition in, you know, the late, you know, 2009, 2010, 2011. But the other thing that I could just see out ahead of was just the fact that remote work was going to become something that, you know, was a big game changer for, you know, the way that human beings and knowledge workers work. But more importantly, I thought it could be an asset for us as an early stage company. Because it is. I mean, it's cliche, but it's all about the people. The ability for a company to recruit highly talented people and put them into, you know, a culture and a set of guidelines and guide rails for them to perform at their optimal, you know, at their highest level is, I mean, that's all great companies are, right? And you pick a good, you know, opportunity to go after. But, like, you know, recruiting talent is always a challenge for every company everywhere. And so how do you, you know, give yourself an advantage? And so for us, that was, you know, hiring remote workers, especially for things like engineers and stuff that everybody's trying to chase a small pool of talent. And so from the very early days, I mean, our third employee, who's now our CTO, George, he was our first remote employee. And, you know, from that day on, we've maintained a ratio of about a third of the company is remote. So today, you know, we have 30 something people that are distributed all across the US. And so, you know, in this day and age, how do you build a working relationship with people and get to know folks? You can do a lot in this day and age with Zoom calls and Slack messages. And, you know, there's a plethora of tools that allow us to communicate and collaborate each and every day, but you still need to have a beer with somebody. You still need to break bread with people and, you know, kind of be physically in the same room as people and sometimes doing whiteboard sessions and things like that. And so back in the early days, you know, we'd bring George in town, then we had Richard and a few other, you know, early employees were remote. And it wasn't like a thing. It was just they came in town, you know, on a semi-routine basis. And then Brittany actually coined the Fleet Week, you know, term at one point because, you know, there's the Fleet Week thing in San Francisco or I know they have multiples of those. But we were just a little bit bigger and it was starting to be like a bigger ordeal, which, you know, we're celebrating a little bit more. And it was just the name kind of stuck. So, but yeah, it's a huge part of our culture.
I love it. So I know you as a very ambitious and forward-looking person, and do you give yourself the time to look back and reflect on the progress and the success you guys have had so far?
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, you do that. I'm more proud of things that surprise me in the sense that I'm, you know, you're always proud of, like, value and you're building value and those types of things. But I guess, you know, it's the softer side of things make me prouder too. Like seeing people that have been on the team for a long time, watching them grow, you know, into great leaders, you know, that's super, that makes me really happy. And seeing, like, again, going back to like hearing things that happened in the company that I didn't really necessarily know about that were just, you know, like a decision I would have made or something that, you know, I'm glad we did it that way. And it's like, but the company is doing those things, you know, and it's growing organically in the right ways, the things that I've just, you know, hoped that we would be doing. And then, you know, you do take moments where it's like those fleet weeks and stuff like that, where you kind of, you stand back and you're like, wow, there's a lot of people that I'm, you know, giving a talk to or whatever. And kind of, we're talking about some fun things, but you kind of take a step back and you look around, we're building out more office space now. You just kind of take little moments where like, well, I can vaguely or vividly remember, you know, starting this this out in my house, you know, and then being a basically a closet in the depot for a couple of years. You know, it's just like it was very small, not that many years ago.
Tony, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Matt. Really enjoyed it.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk.